And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. That's right. I mean, we're spanning south of Birmingham, north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa over to Gadsden, parts of those neighboring states of Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee, just thrown in just for good measure. All right, listen, I'm going to switch gears. We are in number two of the Triple Dipper, and this one's more fun. I kind of touched on this, I guess it's been, 2 months ago? But I'm calling this section The Need for Speed. So those of y'all in my generation, you remember Top Gun 1, all right, the first. And you know, there's that scene when Goose and Maverick are talking, and I don't remember which one of them said it first, but it was, I feel the need, they both said, the need for speed. I mean, that movie, I still remember, so Boomer, 1986?
Oh, I know Top Gun.
I'm sure you do, but so 1986, huge year for me. Mm-hmm. 1986, married my sweet wife of 36 years. But it was also the year I also went to Army Airborne School to be a paratrooper.
Wow.
I remember driving, so I remember in August of 86, driving to Airborne School, listening to Kenny Loggins' Danger Zone, like blaring, because I am headed off to be a paratrooper. To me, that was the Army version of Top Gun. I was going in, man. So remember, you've seen Top Gun 1
multiple times.
Okay.
Staple.
It is. It's like, I would question your manhood if you'd not seen it.
I understand. I don't have anything else to say. I get it.
But you've also seen Top Gun Maverick.
Yes, I have.
At least how many times?
Twice? Yes, okay. I've been trying to go a third time.
All right, so I went to see it, and Charlene's probably listening right now, and she'll probably say, yes, now that you've reminded me, that is true. But she was out of town. I went to see it with a friend. But she is as much into war movies as I am. Like, so our first date, which we started dating in 1985, but our first date was Rambo, and it was her idea. Yeah. Like our dog, you ever see our dog Ranger? You remember Ranger?
Yes.
All right, so big black Doberman named Ranger. She named him. All right, that's my wife. I'm just saying.
Nice.
Yeah, she looks like she's all sweet and kind of, you know, demure. Oh, listen, there's a side to her. It'll jack you up, man. But she's not yet seen Top Gun Maverick.
Okay, I'm going to make a confession. My wife has not either, and she wanted to, and I told her I was going to watch it with her, and I just couldn't wait because she kept putting it off, so I just went.
So, oh, really?
Twice.
Yeah.
So I tried to get her both times.
So what's about to happen now is our wives are about to go one night and leave us at home. That's what's going to happen. All right, but here's the thing, folks. All right, so I'm switching gears. Number two on the Triple Dipper, The Need for Speed. First of all, understand this. Top Gun Maverick. This is worth talking about. And if you want to call in and tell me your favorite Top Gun story, I would love to hear it. But Top Gun Maverick is wearing it out still to this day. So here's a story that I pulled off of Variety. Variety.com, dated August 20th, 3 days ago. Top Gun Maverick takes down Avengers Infinity War as the sixth highest grossing movie in domestic box office history. History. In the history of history. So it says the milestones keep rolling in. After 13 weeks on the big screen, Top Gun Maverick has collected $683 million in North America alone, enough to overtake Marvel's Avengers Infinity War, $678 million, as the sixth highest grossing movie in domestic box office history. It's about to enter the golden top five, all right? It says, sure, Maverick had Tom Cruise, a box office hero in his own right, but moviegoers hadn't felt the need for speed in more than 30 years. The sequel to 1986's Top Gun was far from a guaranteed hit. It was going to require endurance, but it's not out of the question to make Top Gun Maverick, and they did it. All right, so here's the deal. It goes on to say the movie is likely to continue selling tickets in theaters, even though, and by the way, I didn't know this. I was planning this segment, and as I'm getting ready, I realized my very next article says that tonight is the night that that you can start getting Top Gun Maverick on, you know, pay-per-view, on-demand type of platforms. You can stream it at home. Boomer's over there shaking his head. Yes, you can. So didn't plan that, They are not paying me for an advertisement. This is not, although, you know what? If they would like to advertise on Right Side Radio, we'll take it. But yeah, Top Gun Maverick is like wearing it out. It says right now in this particular article from Variety, it set a Memorial Day weekend opening record with $160.5 million in its first weekend, Memorial Day. And it stayed in the top five for 10 weeks, dropped to sixth place for 1 week, and then went back up to number two. And the guy who's writing the article says, this does not happen. But it also says that among the film's numerous records, Maverick is Tom Cruise's first movie to surpass $100 million a single weekend. It's the first one of his movies to ever reach $1 billion. $1 billion. $1 billion box office dollars, Boomer. It hadn't even gone to video or streaming yet.
That's insane.
Okay. Okay. I'm trying to get past all the zeros here.
There's a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of zeros. But so what's the scoop, man? I mean, next article I got came from Forbes. Talks about the fact that it does come out today on, August 23rd, today, on demand services. But here's the deal. It also says that Top Gun Maverick saved movie theaters. I mean, look at what happened. Can you imagine being a movie theater owner during the pandemic? I mean, you were shut down for how long?
I mean, yeah, no one wanted to go, and they couldn't even open. I'm sure cities wouldn't even let them, right?
Even when they're allowed to open, people were scared to death because they've been so bludgeoned by fear,
right?
By the mainstream media and others that, you know, don't go out masking, social distancing, you know. Then theaters are having to sanitize the seats, which, by the way, that ain't a bad idea.
No.
I used to work at a movie theater. They need to sanitize the seats. Yeah. Top Gun Maverick really did save movie theaters this summer. It says the film is a metaphor for how Hollywood so egregiously failed to create a new generation of Tom Cruise-level movie stars that Cruise had to get off the bench and save the industry. That's interesting. The subtext resonated in the summer of 2022, it says, when it seemed like theaters might only be safe for a Marvel or DC movie or a high-end horror flick. It says the film is nostalgia-tinged. It's a cash-in legacy sequel. Its success was partially driven by older and irregular moviegoers. I guess I'm an older and irregular moviegoer who hadn't been to theaters in years. It has, and so here's interesting, because every once in a while a movie comes along that takes on a life of its own, and it lumps this into those. It says it was a Passion of the Christ or American Sniper level event, which legged out to a near Force Awakens level success. It says at least some of that audience then showed up for regular movies like Elvis and others like Where the Crawdad Sings and Bullet Train. So others are now seeing resurgence in movie attendance because people went to see this movie. And it literally says, Forbes says, Maverick's exceptional success supplied a giant lifeline to theaters and a cover for studios who were willfully under-delivering prior to that. Well, that's interesting. But here's the thing. Why? Why is it what it is? Well, I pointed out to you a minute ago that when I was in 1986, when I was just a puppy, just squealing, just sitting on the curb, just lost, and I saw Top Gun, and I was going to airborne school that summer, man. I put in for airborne school, I got a slot, and I went. I was freaking fired up. And part of that, I mean, literally, I guarantee you, part of that was just being stoked about, number one, I was entering into this military phase of my life, but number two, I was playing the soundtrack to Top Gun in my car while I drove there. I was fired up. But I pulled an article, believe it or not. LA Times, July 1986. Reaching back into archival history. Back when you could actually trust the LA Times to report. I know. It says, Top Gun is boosting service signups. So 1986, they were attributing Top Gun to an increase in people enlisting in the military. It says, regulations prohibit the Navy from promoting the hit movie Top Gun and its recruitment efforts, but the film extolling the service's best fighter jocks apparently has become a valuable tool, at least in some parts of the Southwest. Says when the film opened in May, that's 1986 May, recruiters in some cities even manned tables outside of movie houses during Top Gun premieres to answer questions from would-be flyboys emerging with a newfound need for speed from the F-14 warplane. Says there seems to have been a big rush And the recruiter being quoted here says, I have to attribute that to the movie. I've asked several of the individuals if they've seen the movie and if that's why they came down to talk to us, and they said yes. On the other end of the spectrum, we've also seen a general increase in young men who don't yet qualify for the program, and I have to attribute that to Top Gun also. In other words, kids who weren't even eligible yet for enlistment were stopping by going, hey, what do I got to do, and can I do anything early? You know, I mean, it was having that kind of social effect. It's not the first movie to do that, though. Not the first. So the movie, would it be my grandfather's era? My father's era? I guess we're going to have to, what year was this filmed? The movie Sands of Iwo Jima. You ever heard of that one, Boomer? I know you're a movie aficionado.
I actually have not.
Oh, Lord.
I know, but I'm very interested in this.
Okay. Yeah, good answer.
I am. Because I am a movie lover.
That was you saying, I could see you now as a kid going, Dad, I didn't break the vase, but I'm very interested who would have done that.
Yeah. Exactly. And I'm kind of mad my dad didn't introduce me to this film.
Sands of Iwo Jima, John Wayne. I believe it was filmed in 1947, if I'm not mistaken, immediately after World War II. So John Wayne did this twice. A movie that sparked general interest in the patriotic aspects of military service. The first one he did was 1947, The Sands of Iwo Jima. And this picked, I just Googled this. It was 1949, I'm sorry. Sands of Iwo Jima. I pulled this one off of a movie blog site. And the guy said what I've heard before in other places. He says, Sands of Iwo Jima is the greatest recruiting film ever made by a branch of the military. In this particular case, it says the U.S. Marine Corps gave full cooperation to the film, even had script approval. The movie was filmed at Camp Pendleton, and the Corps provided ample equipment. The Marine Corps hierarchy knew that a successful film could help it survive potential demotion in the post-war years. Mission accomplished. In the process, it also bumped John Wayne up to a screen icon and the great American cinematic soldier and began his long run at the box office. It even goes down to the point that it plays the Marine Corps hymn over the credits at the end. And a voiceover informs us this will be a small unit movie of a heterogeneous squad trained by Sergeant Stryker John Wayne. Well, listen, it's important. And by the way, he did it again with the Green Berets. So interest in Special Forces really kicked in after John Wayne made the movie The Green Berets. Love that movie. How many times have you seen that movie? I can't watch it enough. Boomer, I tell you what. Tell Brian I got to take a break right now. We're at that point. But if he wants to hang on during the break or call right back after, we'll take his call, all right? In the meantime, take us to a break, brother. I'm going to come back. We're talking Top Gun, The Need for Speed. What are your memories of Top Gun? Did it inspire you? That's Top Gun 1 or Top Gun 2. But then I'm going to get into why is it a sellout movie? It's not just because it's a good movie, in my opinion. We'll talk more about that in a minute. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and The Need for Speed. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. I got a caller on. Is that Brian? Yeah, Brian's on line one. Brian from Huntsville. How you doing, bud?
Doing well, and I hope you are. Everybody is.
We're doing good, man.
Man, I love the thing about Top Gun because one of the things that I got out of the first one was simply, if I remember correctly, that was the one where he was polishing buckles and everything and trying to put it up for inspection up above in the ceiling and pulling it down later.
You're thinking of Officer and a Gentleman. That's what that was.
Oh, I'm thinking of Officer and a Gentleman.
That was Officer and a Gentleman. Yeah, Richard Gere.
That was the one. I apologize. I messed it up because that was the one that I got my thing about guard mount before I made NCO, and I was doing the same thing after that to actually make the man, so to say, guard mount. And that way I get the day off in reserve.
Nice.
And it spend a little bit of money and get an extra day off every once in a while when you have to hit the guard.
Nice. Yeah, good stuff, now, man.
I got the wrong movie. Okay, you have a good one.
I see, bud. But it was still a great movie. I actually did a monologue on Officer and a Gentleman not long ago, and I need to go back and look and see what my point was in that. I think it was because, oh, yeah, I know what it was. It was that whole section when Richard Gere's character was about to get kicked out of the Navy, and he said, I got nowhere else to go. And basically, he had no alternatives in life. But, yeah, that was a good flick, though, too, Brian. All right, so I'm back on Top Gun. I would love to hear if you've got a Top Gun story. I would love to hear it. And something Brian just said there, too, about the doing the belt buckles and getting going the extra mile so you could earn a day. So at airborne school, I will never forget this. So now I got to tell a story. Now I'm into war stories, but I got to tell the story. So at airborne school, I'm sure by now it's easier because, you know, if you ask any paratrooper or any ranger when they went through this course, it's back when it was hard. That's the answer. Back when it was hard. So I went to airborne school back when it was still hard. And we know you had to have inspections daily. So you stand there in inspection. What you did not want to do was get a deficiency in your inspection, a gig they called it, and they get sent to the gig pit. The gig pit was where special PT was done. So everybody did morning PT, physical training. And it was tough. It was airborne PT. I mean, you're sweating, you're rolling around the sawdust. They literally they would turn you into a crusted Twinkie. They would get you hot, wet, and sweaty, and then make you roll around in the sawdust pit because that's how you got it all stuck all over you. Anyway, yes, big fun. But the gig pit though was supposed to be where they smoked you, like it was punishment. So those who passed inspection were like, "Whoo, regular PT." Okay, I'll stick with that. The gig pit was where you didn't want to go. So every single day you got your boots. I mean, you had to have your boots inspected along with your uniform. Did you shave close enough? Yada, yada, yada. And so we would literally have to go through everything it took to get ourselves ready. There was this Marine behind me who was going to a force recon unit. And every single day he would pass inspection and then request the opportunity to go to the gig pit. Sergeant Airborne! You know, Lieutenant so-and-so hereby requests permission to go to the gig pit. They knew that it was his way of being hua. They look at him and go, no. Just like that, no. And they move on to the next one. It just drove him crazy. You could see his face turning red. And finally, I'll never forget this. There was one day when, like towards the end, they're doing the inspection. And what they do is they would start and they would look at you. They would start top to bottom. And they would go down your ears, your shaving, your uniform, yada, yada. They come all the way down. He had taken his boots and gotten white out and wrote the words gig pit on the toes of his boots in white out. And I'll never forget, the airborne instructor looks down at him and goes, Move out, sir. Arf! One for Chesty Puller. Arf! And he takes off running for the gig pit. Had the best time of his life. And what was funny was, I got fired up by him. And there was one day, though, when I don't know what my gig was. They said I didn't shave close enough or something. I know what it was. They said, gig pit. And I said, I had the audacity to say, not clear, Sergeant. And he went. He looked at me like he couldn't believe I said that. He looked at the guy next to me and goes, tell your buddy to stand closer to his razor in the morning. Move out, you. Yes, Sergeant. And I went, you know what? It was a good workout. I volunteered for the gig pit every day after that. It was just whatever. But I'll never forget that Marine. He was going force recon. And he was all in, man. Wrote gig pit on the toes of his boots. That's hardcore right there. Oh, that's good stuff. All right. I'm just telling war stories now. I'm just having a good time. We're going to come back, though. I'm going to wrap this segment up. I mean, I only had a couple minutes, so heck, why not tell a story? But we're gonna come right back, and we're going to talk about this. Top Gun stories. Have you got one? And by the way, I'm going to unpack in more detail why some people believe that Top Gun Maverick is exceeding all expectations and setting milestone records on box office returns still to this day. Why? Is it just because it's a good movie? I think it's way more than that. I think it's what the movie's about. I think it's what the movie portrayed. I think it's exactly what we needed. At a time we need it most, something tells us it's okay to be proud of being an American? Oh, yeah. Now we're getting down to it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. More on the need for speed, solid conservative, and just plain right when we get back. Y'all stay tuned. Come on.
listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here in the Right Side studio. Hour number three, local, state, national, solid, conservative, and just plain right. So I'm in number two of the triple dipper. I'm calling it the need for speed. Top Gun. If you got a Top Gun story, I'd love to hear it. The phone number here, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. That's how we remember it. 833-68-RIGHT. Top Gun. Either one. Does what are your thoughts on it? Is it more than just a movie? Is it have any kind of special place and like, you know, something that inspired you along the way, or did you enlist because of it? Well, I'm going to tell you right now. I really believe that the reason why it's selling out theaters worldwide, why it's become a $1 billion box office smash, why it held its spot in the top of the box office for, you know, something like 2.5 months or more, and why it's expected to continue setting records when it hits streaming tonight, is more than just the fact that it's a quality movie. Now, I will say this. The cinematography is amazing. I'm not a fighter pilot. I mean, I've had a chance to do some cool things in my life, but that ain't one of them. I've never been behind the stick. I don't know what it's like to land on a carrier, or for that matter, take off from a carrier. But I can tell you right now, there are moments in that movie when you're like, whoa, I can almost feel that. I mean, they went way out of the way to make this the most realistic non-CGI flying movie ever. I mean, they put multiple, now that you can do good quality mini cams, they put good quality mini cams around inside the cockpit so that, for instance, there's one scene when Tom Cruise is taking off the carrier deck, and as he hits those G's, you can see his body react to it, and then literally as he comes off the deck and he has that slight dip right as he comes off the deck, but then kicks it up real quick when the afterburners kick in, you can literally see his face react, and it's real. It's just amazing. Now, okay. I'm going to tell you right now, the prevailing thought is that this movie went out of the way not to be woke. It went out of, I know Boomer's over there. If you can see Boomer on camera right now. But it went out of the way not to be woke. It went out of the way not to denigrate America. It went out of the way not to kowtow to the Chinese influences in Hollywood. It went out of the way to make sure that America came out looking good. How about that? At the end of 2 to 3 years where we have been just beaten up constantly, systemically racist nation, BLM riots and CRT in classrooms and pandemics and wear your mask and the pandemic of the unvaccinated and get your 19th boost and what, I mean, for the love of God, we had an opportunity for something with entertaining value, but that also made us feel good about who we know that we actually are. It's not like it re-inspired us to believe we can be that way. It reminded us who we are. And we got to have that once in a while, man. We got to have the opportunity to be allowed to celebrate what we know this nation is. Not just our own, you know, sense of belonging and the glad feeling we have of being a part of the greatest nation in the history of the world, but we're literally on able to celebrate where we stand on the world stage because America came out looking good in that movie. And I don't want to do too many spoiler alerts here, but if you're just wondering how we look in the end of the movie, let me just tell you right now, at the end of that movie, if you're not too old and broken down like me, you may want to enlist. So, I mean, there have been multiple movies. Daily Wire had a piece, came out in April of this year, talked about how many cinematic moments nearly ruined certain movies. So, I mean, you've got like Avengers Endgame. It was important that they identify with the LGBTQ agenda. And so Captain America, you know, was congratulating a man about a date he'd recently had with a man. That was so random. Why was that? Why was that part of the movie? Well, they needed to make sure that they got an ESG score, I guess. Charlie's Angels in 2019 just went like cringeworthy, and it had moments where you're being preached at about women are starving all the time. It's hard to be a woman in your 40s. You know, it was even the left wing the blog or magazine Slate came out and said the film was way too concerned with its own messaging that it fails to be fun. He had Star Trek Beyond 2016, where, you know, the original character of you know, George Takei played Mr. Sulu. He was not gay in the original series. He was gay in the movie. It was important. And that was just a woke moment to make sure you gave something to the gay community that believes they don't have enough gay characters. Like, you have to have gay characters in movies to feel good about yourself? Okay. Well, all said and done, this article goes on to talk about the number of movies that were made that literally had to throw wokeness in to bow down to some cultural something in society and almost ruined the movie by doing it. Well, not this one. Not this one. I got some callers calling in, so let me grab those before I wrap this section up, because I got two articles here that talk about what's happening with military recruiting because of Top Gun Maverick. And oh, by the way, sort of an affirming article that talks about exactly what I just said about the fact that this was a pro-America movie that resonated, and that's what it made it successful. I'll grab line one. Is that Allie? Allie from Athens. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. I just want to tell you what I think, and that is that what always prevails in the American human heart is the desire to be a part of something that is bigger than yourself. And the reason why this is so powerful is because those visceral themes of life, the bad guys, getting the bad guys, taking risks, and having to be your true self, going to the mat.
Yeah.
That's what it reignites. And I want to illustrate it with a story about my own father. My dad was 5'5 and a half and weighed 128 pounds soaking wet.
Wow.
And when World War II broke out, of course, like everyone else, he signed up, and he was already in the Civil Air Patrol, started in the Civil Air Patrol when he was in high school. Well, he was not tall enough, and he did not weigh enough to get into the United States Navy Air Corps, the Naval Air Corps.
Oh,
and
wow.
So what he did, as an engineering student, he put a bar up in the backyard. He was still living at home with my grandparents, and he stretched himself.
He stretched and himself.
Yeah, he did. He stretched himself to hang off of that bar. And on the morning of his induction, just before my grandfather took him, he went in a 1934 coupe, laid down in the back seat so that he wouldn't squish his spine down, drank nearly a gallon of water. The man was in pain. Went in, got measured, got, you know, height, weight, and then he hit the head. And he made it in at 5'6 and 132 pounds. And 2 weeks later, they dropped the regulations to where he could be 5'5 and a half and 128 pounds. But he did it. He did it because it was the thing to do. It was being a man. It was being an American. It was no apologies. It was like, let's go.
Let's
do this thing.
That is awesome. That is awesome. I've heard people talk about trying to fatten up. I've heard folks talk about trying to put lifts in their shoes. I've never heard somebody stretch themselves. That is awesome.
He was an engineering student. He had his own dad for an engineering class in college.
That's awesome.
So they came up with that. Yes, they did.
Oh, Allie, I got two others on the line I got to get for the break, but I appreciate it. That's a cool story. Thank you, my friend. You have a great day.
You're welcome, sir.
All right. Line two, Jeff from Indiana. Jeff Rowe, how you doing today, bud?
Doing good, Phil.
Good.
Hey, I didn't have a jet back then, but I did the bike scene and everything when he's buzzing down the strip, you know, and everything.
About
150.
Yeah.
I had a CBX Honda, which was bad bike back in the day, you know, and everything. But after watching the movie, I had to get on there and crank it down the road. It'd run 140, so which nowadays it'd be like, hey, get off the road, Grandpa. That was the bikes they got nowadays.
Did you have the leather jacket with patches on it too?
Oh, no, no, he didn't wear no leather jacket on Honda, man. What are you talking about? You had to have a windbreaker. But I still got the bike, though. It's sitting in my son's garage. So.
How about that? How about that?
Yeah.
Good stuff,
man. I
never
get rid of anything.
Well, all right, Jeff, I got one more on the line. Let me go grab it for the break, brother. You take care. Appreciate you. Line three, Charles from Morgan County. How you doing, Charles?
I'm good, Phil. I was going to tell you about my father.
Yeah.
He was the enforcement director of the Alcohol Beverage Control in 1990 under Hunt's administration.
Okay.
He was the head of the drug task force for the ABC at that time. He flew the helicopter looking for drug fields, you know, marijuana fields back then.
Yeah.
And a man that they had caught, him and a sergeant, landed the helicopter where they were, and one put his hands up when the sergeant told him to freeze, and the other one took off into the woods, Phil. And my father took off in the helicopter to go after him and hit the sawmill power lines that tangled around the propeller, and it killed him.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yes, and the thing that I was going to tell you in a George Floyd kind of way with this here is they asked me, as the oldest son, they said, we can prosecute him for running. Your father would not have died. And I said, well, my father should have looked for the power lines. Anybody could have been hurt. And that was the way I looked at it, instead of the way that it's being looked at from that other point of view inside, that's a non-Christian kind of way. And I thought that that would be a story that would, I know it's sad, but there were sad things on Top Gun, too. And, yeah, my father was responsible. It used to be when you would go in and after these undercover operations, they would know that you were going to come in at 3:30 in the morning or to get them at different times. And he organized where in Tuscaloosa and Birmingham and areas, they all synchronized, all the agents came, and they went into the houses at the same time no one could run. That was him that organized that.
Wow.
Doing that, Phil.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your father's service. And I'm sorry to hear it ended the way it did, but I've known a few guys who worked those task forces like that laid on the pot fields and tried to find the illegal drug stashes. And that's yeoman's work right there, man.
Yes, sir. And he went in, even though he didn't have to. He went in with his guys,
and we need more people like that, to be honest. The people who will go to hard places and do hard things. Hey, Charles, appreciate you telling us your story, brother. I got to go to a break, but that's an honorable story, and I appreciate you letting us know. All right, man. All right, Boomer, take us to the break, brother. We will come right back. I'll wrap this up. Why is Top Gun Maverick the movie that it is in the box office? We'll hit a few markers on that and wrap this segment up. But if you got a story, I'd love to hear it. 833-68-RIGHT. That's the number, 833-687-4448. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, man. Solid conservative, just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. We're talking about Top Gun. By the way, I want to just take an aside real quick and say to, if he's still listening, I hope he is, Charles from Morgan County called in, talked about his dad, and I think I just need to say on the air, hey, sir, your father was a hero, and appreciate his service very much. Hard places, hard things, take hard people. And I'm glad that we had folks like him out there doing the job that he did. You just got an email, though, by the way. What was that email you got, man?
Yeah. So I got an email from a guy. He's calling himself Goose. Which
he calls
is
himself.
Awesome.
He calls himself Goose.
I love that.
All right, just
saying that. But what his email, it said, as much as Top Gun was all about Maverick, it took the death of Goose to push Maverick to come to the moment of self-discovery. Hmm. Maverick grew up and matured from the loss and the trial of Goose's death. Without Goose dying, how would Maverick ever change into his iconic character, which we now get to experience in Top Gun Maverick?
I need a moment of reflection now.
Yeah.
that was pretty epic.
It brings back kind of what Allie was saying. It's about that self-discovery.
Yes, absolutely. And And I think it's one of those things. The movies like that that are grounded to some degree in reality, they inspire you to go do more than perhaps you would have done on your own. But they also remind you that those things are possible, that there are people out there willing to do those things. But I love the point he makes there about, you know, Maverick's character, which, by the way, has now transcended three decades. Mm. I mean, think about it.
Wow.
In fact, I remember when they first said, okay, they're redoing Top Gun, I thought, how are they going to redo Top Gun? I mean, Tom Cruise is like 90 years old or something. How is he going to do that? No. And they said, and I saw a commercial, and they were talking about, you know, Captain Pete Mitchell. And I thought, he's only a captain? Well, I was stuck in Army mode. A captain is a company grade officer it's a 03 mm-hmm. in the Army. It's an 06. So technically after 30 years in the Navy, he should have been promoted a bit more than 06, and all of his peers were now admirals, but he was at least a colonel level is what he was. He was an 06. Mm. But yeah, that, and by the way, that came out in this Top Gun Maverick too. What Goose just said in that email to you. Mm-hmm. That would definitely played out in this particular sequel, and I'll tell you too. So, story that I pulled off of and I could have found it in several places. StarTelegram.com has a piece titled "Top Gun Maverick is exactly the movie a battered America needs, and here's why." One of the main reasons, it's pro-America, and they point out several things. It presents a United States and its military that is clearly projecting power for the right reasons to keep an unnamed rogue country from getting nuclear weapons. No character is perfect, but we're the good guys, and we're not sorry about it. And after years of toxic politics, the failures of the pandemic, and the shame of January 6th, we're you know, they say this in the article, we're in a slump. It said bashing America has become a feature. The left wants to dwell on America's history of racism. And then they go on to talk about how some on the right believe America is culturally corrupt and full of vice and little virtue. I think he's trying to split hairs here. I think mostly on the left. But then he goes on to say, there's also satisfaction in knowing that unlike most corporate entertainment cowards, the producers of the Top Gun sequel took a chance and said no to China because Maverick's jacket features a Taiwanese flag and a Chinese company reportedly pulled out of backing the movie because of the pro-America overtones and the Taiwan flag. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And lastly, I'll just say this. Article from the Washington Times, dated June 8th of this year. Cruise control. That's a pun there. Cruise control. Pentagon hoping Top Gun Maverick will boost recruiting like the original did. Goes on to say in here, U.S. military recruiters are facing what some say is the toughest market for prospects since the end of the Vietnam War. And they're hoping to pounce once again on a surge of patriotism and adrenaline that the movie Top Gun Maverick inspires. Says the release of the original movie in 1986 gave the impression that life in the Navy was a glamorous, high-octane thrill ride, and after its release, applications to become naval aviators reportedly jumped by 500%. Then, as now, it says some canny recruiters are setting up information booths right outside of theaters for those who are high on the action they just witnessed inside. I'm just saying, Top Gun Maverick, the reason why it hit all the marks, because it wasn't woke. It made you proud to be an American. And oh, by the way, it was a daggum good movie. That's a great combination. Maybe, just maybe, Hollywood will wake up and realize you don't have to kowtow down to the leftist, liberal, progressive ideologies and whatever China wants you to do. You can actually go be proud Americans making movies, and it might work out for you. $1 billion later, Top Gun Maverick has proven it. All right, folks, we got a little more when I get back. I'm going to get to number three on the Triple Dipper. How about that? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.